Welcome to the Capital Connection, a weekly program questioning New York State leaders on a variety of issues. Your host is Dr. Alan Chartok, political scientist and professor emeritus at the University at Albany. Distribution for the Capital Connection is made possible with the help of New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.
Welcome to the Capital Connection. I'm Alan Chartok. Our guest is Jimmy Vielkind, the Albany Bureau Chief for Politico New York. Vielkind previously covered New York State government for the Albany Times Union and its Capital Confidential blog. Jimmy Vielkind, as always, welcome back to the show.
Happy to be here with you and your listeners.
Okay, so let me start by asking an all-encompassing question about New York State politics. Okay, ready?
I'm ready.
What do you got?
What do I got? Well, New York is the Empire State, and we're actually in kind of a lull for state politics. It's not a legislative election year. It's not a gubernatorial election year. Next year, 2018, will be a much bigger year for state politics. And usually this year in the cycle, 2017 and 2013 before it, most of the oxygen gets sucked up by the race for New York City mayor. But that's not shaping out to be too much of a race. Bill de Blasio, the Democratic incumbent, does not have a primary challenger. The city, of course, has a very significant enrollment edge for Democrats over Republicans. So everyone expects that he's going to sort of win in a walk. And so this kind of year, it's always interesting to see sort of what percolates to the top. What issues come forward in state politics that might otherwise get swallowed up if it were a busier time. And of course, New York politics, like politics everywhere in the United States and arguably around the world, has become subordinate and reactive in a way to what's going on in Washington, D.C., in a way that prior to the election of Donald Trump as president, it just was not. It was an entity unto itself that sort of drove itself. And so what up in New York politics? Kind of reacting to Washington, wondering if there will be a federal health care bill and what impact that will have on the state, wondering what the midterm elections of 2018 will bring and waiting to see how that shakes out. And, you know, certainly wondering how our current governor, Andrew Cuomo, is going to position himself on the national stage, both in 2018 and perhaps as a candidate for president in 2020.
Will Andrew Cuomo have any trouble at all becoming the governor again?
Well, I think that he is in a formidable position within the party. He's going to report, we expect, millions of dollars for his war chest. He has lots of tangible accomplishments that have proven popular with people in this state, including pushing for a $15 minimum wage. However, he's got some vulnerabilities, including a corruption trial that is expected to start either later this year or early next year, including some of his top allies, Alain Calieros of SUNY Polytechnic Institute, and Joe Prococo, a political aide who the governor has likened to a brother. That could drag him down. He's facing persistent problems with the upstate economy, both without migration and with lingering unemployment and lingering economic despair in certain areas. There are parts of upstate New York that are doing well. Buffalo is doing well. Here in the capital region, we are doing relatively well. But there are other parts of the state that are really lagging. And Cuomo has over 7 years in office, and by next year it'll be 8 years in office. He's amassed a record that I think a formidable and smart challenger could use to sort of pick at and run against him. You, of course, remember, Alan, when no name from the Hudson Valley, who went on to become a three-term governor, George Pataki, took out the political titan who was Mario Cuomo. So I think the governor certainly enters in a very strong position. He says he's going to run. I think that he should think hard about whether or not he's going to seek a third term or not. And I think that there's a very interesting calculation and analysis to be had on that question. But he certainly enters a reelection year in a formidable position with good approval ratings, a large campaign war chest, and accomplishments on which he could base a campaign.
He wants to name the bridge that he has just built, the Mario M. Cuomo Bridge. He's getting unexpected pushback.
Well, it was one of those things that was tucked into what we call at the Capitol a big ugly, sort of a large omnibus piece of legislation that, among other things, renewed mayoral control of New York City schools and reauthorized roughly $2 billion in local taxes, many of which were important to upstate counties that based their budgets around sales tax revenue. And yes, the provision did name the upcoming Tappan Zee Bridge for Mario Cuomo. The Tappan Zee, of course, carries the state thruway over the Hudson River between Westchester and Rockland.
And had a name of a Republican on it.
And was named in 1994, I believe, by that other Governor Cuomo, Mario Cuomo, after Malcolm Wilson, who served as governor but was never elected because he was the lieutenant governor under Nelson Rockefeller. And when Rockefeller became vice president, Malcolm Wilson served dutifully and then was defeated in his attempt to stand for election. But there was a poll released on Tuesday of this week by a group called Reclaim New York. They're a group that has been sort of advised and set up by some Republican operatives and funded by conservatives. So they say they're nonpartisan, but they do have those connections. And it found that a majority of New Yorkers surveyed in those two counties, Westchester and Rockland County, I think it was 54%, disagreed with the idea of naming the bridge. And then the poll went on, and it used some language that was a little bit brusque about how the bridge was renamed, using that omnibus bill, doing it in a special session of the legislature right before the July 4th holiday. And people got really riled up, and a much larger percentage said that this was a terrible idea. But I think it speaks to, and many people have said, a sort of arrogance that certainly Andrew Cuomo is not the only politician to be guilty of arrogance, but also maybe a disconnect that when there are pieces of legislation, there are issues that affect the lives of many people, and that New Yorkers of varying stripes are arguing vociferously for at the state capitol. This got done. They were able to rename a bridge after three politicians, a bridge after Mario Cuomo, a park in West Harlem after Denny Farrell, a longtime assemblyman from the area, and a stretch of highway in the Hudson Valley after Senator Bill Larkin, a combat veteran, war hero, and longtime elected representative. But they didn't take up bills that certain people wanted them to. So I do think that it feeds a narrative. I think that it's an issue that could be exploited upon, but it's done. We have the Cuomo Bridge.
Now, how about Cuomo and the MTA? Get Charlie off that MTA.
Well, the MTA is, it's bubbled up and it's becoming a real political issue. And I think the jury is still out as to how real and how ripe an issue it's going to become and how big a problem it could be for Governor Cuomo. Of course, the MTA is a massive state chartered public authority. It runs the subways in New York City, the buses on the city streets. It runs bridges and tunnels across the East River, the Harlem River. It runs commuter rail lines up the Hudson Valley and out to Long Island. It's a giant beast, and it's having some real, real, real problems, particularly in the subways. And the reason is not some overarching thing, but it's sort of the 1,000 cuts idea. So the MTA had for many years been sort of kept on a very lean diet, if not starved, for the capital dollars it needed to upgrade its existing service lines, to put in place better signals for the tracks, to buy more subway cars, to upgrade the existing subway cars, et cetera, et cetera. And as a result of that, and as a result also of the exploding population, the exploding economy of New York City, and the increasing popularity of the system, it's starting to get bogged down. There are delays.
It's been called the summer of hell.
It's been called many things that I don't think we're allowed to say here on the radio on WAMC over the airwaves. And it's a major point of frustration for New Yorkers. So Governor Cuomo effectively controls the MTA. He nominates its leader. He nominates the plurality of the board. And in effect, the authority's employees work very closely with the governor's office. And, that there's quite a bit of overlap there. So the governor, as these problems started to bubble up, said, oh, well, I don't actually control the MTA.
And he got hell for that.
Yeah, no one really bought that. That one didn't pass the smell test for anybody, really. Newspapers, journalists, everyone sort of called everyone sort of called baloney on that from the minute it came out of his mouth. But now he's trying to put more money toward the MTA. And a Quinnipiac poll released Wednesday of this week found that I think a majority of New Yorkers gave him either a C, a D, or an F. Now, in my family, those are bad grades. It was, I think, 28% gave an A or a B. 4% statewide gave an A. I think about 24% gave a B. So I think this could be a real liability. But again, in politics, you need a horse to take out another horse or to take on another horse. And right now there is nobody, either Democrat or Republican, who is sort of grabbing onto this issue and trying to direct frustration and problems and anger against Governor Cuomo. So until that happens, I don't know if it's going to be a political liability.
So the Republicans don't seem to have anybody to run against them.
Well, there are several Republican candidates.
Well, I'm talking about of major proportion who could take him out.
Well, I don't know what major proportion is. Two of the candidates are shorter than me, Mark Molinaro and Rob Astorino. So I don't know if we're dealing with proportion in that way.
Very funny.
Thank you. the Republican Party in New York is an uphill fight. Everyone knows that. The registration numbers are about 2-1 Democratic enrollment advantage. Democrats have lots more campaign resources to bear. But Republicans have a base, particularly in upstate New York and extending parts into the New York City suburbs, that has proven to be capable of winning statewide office as recently as 2002. When George Elmer Pataki was elected to a third term against two Democrats, one of whom was Andrew Cuomo. He, of course, for listeners who don't remember, or didn't live through it like Alan and I did, he aborted his gubernatorial bid just before the Democratic primary, and George Pataki went on to defeat Carl McCall, who was at the time the state comptroller.
I think we should just remember, just in terms of getting through the history properly here, Jimmy, that Andrew, after Carl McCall had it all but sewn up, Andrew at the last moment threw himself into the race, getting the consternation of an awful lot of people, because Carl McCall was the first person of color, I think, to run as a gubernatorial candidate on the Democratic Party. So he got a lot of murd as a result of that.
Yes, there was some pushback, certainly. But so I do think that there is a possibility of a real Republican challenge. Party leaders are talking about Rob Astorino, who ran against Cuomo in 2014. Astorino's up for re-election this year, and he's going to face what I expect will be a robust campaign against State Senator George Latimer, the Democratic candidate. Mark Molinaro, the county executive a little bit further north up the Hudson in Dutchess County, he said he's exploring a run. He's moving around the state. He's getting to know you. And there's a man named Harry Wilson, who in 2010 was the Republican candidate for comptroller.
And who has a lot of money, so they like him.
He has personal wealth. And so the big thing, people say that there are two things that are important in politics, the money and, I forget the other. And Wilson seems to bring the most money to the plate, which is, again, knowing that whomever the Republican candidate is going to be will have to face off against Andrew Cuomo, who will probably have $30 to $40 million to spend on a campaign.
Yeah. Now, as long as we're on the Cuomo issue, he got up the other day, the governor did, and, well, seemed to bawl out the reporters for insisting, as I have from day one, that he was going to be running for president. I say, is Andrew Cuomo running for president? I say, does a bear walk in the woods? And so, of course he's running for president. But it's the proper thing to do is to say, I'm not really running for president until I am.
Right, exactly. So I think he'll make a go, no-go decision about whether to actually become a national candidate probably late in 2019.
I think he's made it already. By the kind of stuff he's doing in New York right now, I think he's made it already.
Well, I was going to say, he is increasingly aligning himself for a 2020 run. He's focusing on competitive districts for the House of Representatives in New York and making a big push for that. He's not talking about the New York State Senate. He's not talking about issues back home. He's talking about federal issues. He's blasting Republican Congress people from New York over the health care bill and over provisions of the health care bill being debated in Congress, not, again, something that is explicitly part of his mandate as the governor of New York. He has hired political operatives with national experience, including someone named Maria Comella, actually a Capital Region native, who previously worked for Republicans, including Chris Christie, Sarah Palin, and Rudy Giuliani. He is doing more and more and more things. He's weighing in more regularly on national issues. He is taking a role in the Democratic Governors Association. He has become less shy about traveling beyond the state's borders to places like Israel or even domestic trips like Florida, where he took a little trip to say hello to his friends in the building trades as they were having a conference in the Sunshine State. And so, yes, he's absolutely laying the groundwork. But I do believe still, Alan, that Anything can happen. Anything can happen between now and the fall of 2019. And Andrew Cuomo knows that. So he's aligning himself. He's putting the foundation in the ground. But whether or not he actually makes a run, I think we'll know at the end of 2019. And I also think that he will think seriously about whether or not to run for a third term next year.
Well, we disagree on that. I think he's running, and I think he's running hard, and I think he'll win. He unfortunately ran into this subway issue, which he has to face now. And it's interesting. I saw one piece of whatever that suggested that people still thought, most people in New York still thought that Bill de Blasio ran the subways. And of course, that isn't true.
Well, can I ask you a question?
You can ask me anything you like.
You were present for Mario Cuomo's third term in office.
I was indeed.
And
I was on the phone with him the night he lost.
Of course. And so that experience was something that was witnessed by Andrew Cuomo. What do you think Mario Cuomo took from the third term? And what do you think Andrew Cuomo took from watching that third term and watching the bid for a fourth term?
Well, I've had conversations with the governor about that very issue. And he has told me specifically that the third term is always rough. However, Mario got defeated for the fourth term. So, what a big difference that is. That was just too much. And I think Andrew is in an interesting competitive race with his father. You know, those two guys, I knew them quite well back in the day, and I knew what went on between them. Now, there was obviously this very strong relationship between the two men. On the other hand, I saw some sparks fly, and I think this is Andrew's way of saying, you see, Pops, I can do what you could never do.
But of course, we also know that Mario Cuomo, famously Hamlet on the Hudson, did not embark on a presidential bid in 1992 or previous years as well. How do you think the third term affected that? And what do you think, again, what did Andrew Cuomo take away from watching what happened to his father?
Well, see, I think I already answered that. I think what the answer to that is, I can do what you couldn't do, Pop.
Okay.
And, you know, third terms are tough, and he knows third terms are tough. But I think he'd love to be president of the United States. And nobody should discount the fact that he can, and I can prove it to you. Because all those people who say to me, he can't win, and I say to them, who's the president now?
It's so true. No more political predictions.
And they have certain common things in common. For example, they can both be bullies, let's face it. Personally, neither man thinks they owe anything, Trump or he, Andrew, thinks they owe anything to anybody. And, you know, that they're supposed to get rather than give that in that kind of relationship. So now one of the things I can't understand, Jimmy Vielkind, Politico, is I can't understand why this governor, who cannot play well with others, keeps on beating up the comptroller, Tom DiNapoli, of the state of New York. From day one, DiNapoli is one of my favorite people in the world. He's a sweet man. He's worked assiduously. He's had a problem here or there. But why Andrew keeps beating him up? Do you have any idea?
I think it's a very, very simple calculation for the governor. He sees someone who has power. The power is not subordinate to him. It could one day, in some form, conceivably threaten him. So he must attack.
I see it just a little bit differently, which is he looks at DiNapoli and says, you're not me, therefore you're no good.
Right. you said it in fewer words.
Yeah. On the other hand, there is this Faso Collins thing. Faso, for those who have been under a rock somewhere, is the congressman from the 19th district. People are on his lawn. They're at his place. I mean, he voted for the health care bill. And folks in the Democratic Party mostly are unforgiving about this. They came up with the Faso Collins rule, which is in both obviously the Senate version of the health care bill and the House version. You want to remind us what it was?
Well, the Faso Collins amendment would effectively force New York state government and the state's sort of accounting books to pick up roughly $2.3 billion in Medicaid costs that are currently borne by counties outside of New York City. So this is a weird kind of only in New York thing. The federal government pays for about half of the cost of Medicaid, and then the states in 49 other states, and New York leads in this area, the state picks up the rest of it. In New York, dating back to the time of Nelson Rockefeller, and dating back really to when Medicaid was first rolled out as part of the Great Society, New York split the state share between the state and between the counties. And people who really understand government know that counties get their money primarily from property taxes and from sales taxes. The state, of course, primarily gets its money from income taxes. And for a long, long, long time, county executives and county leaders, and even some state leaders, and this has predominantly been a Republican idea, but there have been some Democrats who have supported it and endorsed it, have said, hey, if the state can take over all these costs and also maybe at the same time centralize how these programs are being overseen, take 57 different county offices overseeing Medicaid and somehow centralize them into one giant state Medicaid office, we'll do better. And so Faso and Collins have put a provision into the federal health care bill that would essentially mandate New York do that. Now, Cuomo says that it would basically cut. It would essentially force him to cut his budget, to cut Medicaid spending in some other area, that it would be devastating, therefore. But there are a lot of people who say, well, why can't the state take over this? Mario Cuomo, again, to keep going back to Mario Cuomo, he supported this idea. People of both stripes have supported this idea of a state takeover. And even Andrew Cuomo has presided over a limited state takeover of counties' share of Medicaid costs. So I don't know what the future holds for the federal healthcare reform rejiggering effort, the HCA, and whatever it will become as the House and the Senate
Trump
or the
care.
Senate. Yeah, but whatever's going to happen, I don't know. But the fact that that amendment was in both the House and the Senate bills, and again, that it's something that only targets us here in the Empire State, I think it's something that we're going to have to be thinking about on a state level one way or the other. And it's something that Cuomo has clearly decided that he's going to try and use as an issue against the Republican Congress people and against Republicans in general.
And interestingly, of course, you make a very good point. I've always thought it wasn't a bad idea for the state to, be taking it.
There are many people who don't think it's a bad idea.
However, I do think what really stinks here is that this was given to just these two New York congressmen to protect them for their votes on voting for basically the Trump care bill.
That's right. And so this was something that allowed John Faso and allowed Chris Collins, a Republican from Erie County, just kind of out the Buffalo suburbs, to say, I know what you want, voters. You want your property taxes to go down. And if we shift Medicaid, your property taxes are going to go down. And never mind the other impacts of this bill, that there will be some 20 million people who will lose health insurance, that there will be cuts from the future projected growth of the Medicaid program. This is something that I've done to tangibly make their lives better, and they've used that as the reason that they supported the legislation.
Yeah. These are interesting times. We have a New Yorker, Donald Trump, in the White House, but he's a guy who doesn't really want to come back to New York, obviously, because in New York, him they don't like.
No, he's not loved. And actually, the last time he came back to Manhattan, I believe, was in the middle of April. They were protesting him on the West Side Highway. He wasn't even able to sleep at his penthouse on Fifth Avenue. He had to jet back out to New Jersey to spend the night where he has a country club.
And that's interesting because, you know, here's a guy, he rebuilt the Wallman skating rink in the middle of Central Park and has his name on it. He did the carousel, which all the children love and the parents bring, and he put his name on that. But didn't seem to do him a lot of good.
Well, I think that New Yorkers have raised major concerns about Donald Trump's policies. He, of course, didn't carry New York State. And actually, even in the Republican primary, the one precinct, the one congressional district that I believe broke against Donald Trump in the Republican primary was his own. It was the congressional district in Midtown in the Upper East Side of Manhattan, which went for John Kasich.
And speaking of unpopular people, with 15% approval rating in the state of New Jersey is Chris Christie. We have almost no time. The two guys, Cuomo and Christie, were making friends for a long time. Do we think that Cuomo is done with all of that now because this guy's a liability?
Well, I think that Christie is sort of fading away into the sunset of American politics. His approval ratings, as you pointed out, have been quite abysmal. He's not going to be governor of New Jersey by the time the year is over. So I think he's proven his utility to Andrew Cuomo, and maybe they'll get coffee on the weekends.
And maybe he'll be on WFAN. In any case, our guest on the Capital Connection has been Jimmy Vielkind, the Albany Bureau Chief for Politico New York. Jimmy, thanks so much for being with us.
Thanks, Alan. Always a pleasure to be with you and your listeners.
The Capital Connection is distributed with the cooperation of the public radio stations of New York State. David Gustina is the producer of The Capital Connection, a production of WAMC Northeast Public Radio in Albany. Support for The Capital Connection comes from New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org, and NISCASA, the New York State Coalition Against Sexual Assault, working to support men in their decision to end sexual violence with the My Strength is Not for Hurting campaign, online at nyscasa.org.